Hey guys, and welcome to the wrap up. If you haven't been here before, this is the official Raptors Republic Live postgame show where we recap, dissect, and have some fun talking about the latest Raptors game. We'd also like to welcome in the Raptors Reaction podcast listeners to this one as well. I'm your co-host, Sahal Abdi, and tonight, as always, we have my great co-host here with me, my therapy partner, my Raptors therapy partner, Oren Weisfeld. Oren, tonight the Raptors were defeated by the Los Angeles Lakers 110-101. That drops Toronto now to an ugly 19-31 record. This game, I don't know, Oren, if it was the toughest Raptors game to watch, but just only because the Raptors have had many games where they've been down 15 to 25 points the entire game with no chance of coming back. I mean, it's sad enough to say that if you watch the entire game and you didn't leave at halftime or at the end of the third quarter, like I'm sure most people did, it's very sad that, you know, the Raptors' best run came in the last minute of the game with Nick Nurse. What did he do? He challenged a call, a referee's call, 30 seconds left in the game with the Raptors down 10.
Yeah. What?
Did you hear what I said?
No, sorry.
Oh, you were completely zoned out.
I don't even blame you.
I don't even blame you at all.
No, I was listening, but the last thing
I heard. Audio issue, but
I think I was, because the last thing I heard was you said, "Yeah, he called the challenge."
Yeah, I was trying to give you that leeway in because you talked about the net rating earlier before we started
recording. Oh, my bad, dude. You know it's late.
The way you looked at me, man, I was like, "Damn, this guy really just zoned out."
I thought you froze, but yeah. I mean, first of all, it's too late for me to make the joke. I was going to say Nick Nurse was trying to keep the Raptors' net rating high. But yeah, I really...
Too late for that, Oren.
I'm not a comedian, as we know. I'm not a stand-up comedian. But I mean, the weird thing is I'm looking at the box score here, and Pascal Siakam played 41 minutes on a back-to-back. So Nick really was not fudging around tonight, man. He just wanted to drive that net rating up. He'll forever be known as the coach with the worst record with the best net rating. So, you know, that's something to go down as for sure. But
yeah, this one sucked, Oren, for me, because I genuinely thought that the Raptors would, you know, coming into this game, that they would, I don't know if I thought that they would win the game, but I thought they'd at least be competitive. And the Lakers just beat the absolute dog S word out of them today. Yeah. So for me, it was kind of like a game where I saw the Raptors last game, Gary Trent Jr., you know, buzzer beater against the Wizards. The vibes were good. The game before that was the Warriors 50-point just absolute beatdown on Friday night. So I was just, you know, naturally, come on, Raptors fans had to come into this game with great vibes. You're facing the Los Angeles Lakers. The LA Lakers did not have LeBron in this game. They did not have Anthony Davis in this game. So unfortunately enough for Toronto, they still managed to find a way to not only lose to the Los Angeles Lakers, but to get destroyed, to put it quite honestly. The three-point attempts is what stuck out for me today. The Lakers shot 7 more three-point attempts than the Raptors. They made 18 of 40. That's 45%. And the Raptors were an abysmal, Oren, 5 for 33 from 3-point land. That's 15% from the field.
That jumped out to me too, looking at the box score. And I think today was a good example of a night where the box score doesn't tell the whole story. Like 3-point variance doesn't tell the whole story. The game was not as close as it looks. Like, really, the Raptors were really bad defensively, leading to a ton of open looks for the Lakers. Like, I would argue that the Lakers' three-point looks in general were much better than the Raptors' three-point looks.
Yeah,
for sure. And yeah, like, I kind of felt coming into this game that, like, I was skeptical. I said last night, like, we'll start talking about a play-in run once they win on the second night of a back-to-back. It's still has only happened once, I believe, all season. I think they're 1-10 now on the second night of a back-to-back. So it really shows the lack of depth on this team. And, you know, Siakam you know, definitely far from a perfect game, but 41 minutes, 15 free throw attempts, 27 points, plus five. He had a pretty, like, he tried his best to carry a team without OG Anunoby, Fred, or Kyle, but obviously there was not enough help from the bench or the rest of the starters to carry them out. And this has been the problem all season. They don't have the depth and they don't have the star power. When, especially on the second night of back-to-backs, when they just look fatigued. And unfortunately for the Raptors, it's going to be a lot more back-to-backs for the rest of the season. The second half of the schedule is really compact. And, like, yeah, if you get to the playoffs, you don't have to deal with this stuff, but it's hard to see them really making a great push when this is the result every time they play a little fatigued.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. I wrote, you know, at one point, down that, why is Stanley Johnson, you know, getting so many minutes in this game? And then it quickly occurred to me that OG Anunoby was the recipient of a technical two foul or a flagrant two, whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to show that. We should talk about that.
Yeah. Right, that was probably the most interesting game.
It was.
Interesting point of the game for us, at least, watching OG
Anunoby. That was the best part of the game.
Yeah. But really, the WWE style takedown. That he took when he took down Dennis Schroeder, I believe it was. I called it a sidewalk slam. If you're a WWE fan, I called it a sidewalk slam. You could have called it a UFC style takedown. It was hilarious. And when you watch it and you understand the type of guy and player OG Anunoby is, it immediately occurs to you that OG didn't really do this on purpose, as weird as the play looked. Like, it was a play where, you know, Dennis, I think, was on the verge of falling. OG's driving in. Dennis grabs him pretty aggressively, but, I mean, it is what it is. If he didn't want him to score. And Dennis eventually just fell to the ground because OG grabs him by his leg. I still don't know what OG was trying to do in this one. It doesn't make much sense to me, but
yeah, sorry, I'm trying to pull it up.
Yeah, we got it coming up in just a second for our live listeners. I got it right here, actually. I'll pull it up for you, Oren.
Perfect. Yeah, my computer is not the fastest, but so, yeah. So my favorite theory that I saw on Twitter is that OG thought he had Schroeder's arm here, and he tried to just look it off his arm. But it really was weird watching, because, you know, watching OG, he doesn't really do stuff like that. So either it was just a very uncharacteristic, like, takedown, or it was an accident. But it's so hard to think it's an accident unless he just had a complete brain fart and just, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the ejection. I was going to say, well, if you're watching that play, like, as a non-Raptor fan, maybe even non-Laker fan, you're probably like, what the hell is OG doing? Because it's like, it's a takedown, but then it's like, what? Like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, OG has him wrapped around his leg, and then he, like, takes him down, but then he tries to lightly, like, put him on. There's so many layers to this clip. And I'm sorry for the Raptors reaction, listeners. Again, this is a live show. So we'll be playing this. You'll see this on YouTube if you do rewatch this, but all of our live watchers are watching this. And I don't know. I don't know what this play was. Dennis was pissed off. Gary Trent Jr. gets the middle of it. Of course, Montrezl Harrell comes absolutely out of nowhere and just starts shoving everyone. He got ejected in this game as well.
Dennis was rightfully pissed off, but I mean, I think the refs overreacted heavily. I think OG definitely deserved a tech, but okay, like, I could understand throwing OG. I really think throwing Harrell is, like, a little much. If I was a Lakers fan, I would be upset about that, because he just tried to, like, back up his boy. He didn't really do anything crazy, and he got ejected. Like, it was crazy. Okay, I mean, they should have both got texted.
Yeah. I say definitely, Harrell. You can't come in like that and not get a tech. Ejection for OG, sure. Like, sure. Like, I'm not going to be a homer and say, like, I mean, if think about it, honestly, if that were, you know, a Laker player doing that to Malachi Flynn or to Kyle or whoever it is, that's an ejection. Like, it's a takedown, whether OG meant it or not. You could see OG immediately, like, holy no.
Yeah, he's like, sorry, I think he was just
so,
like,
sorry. Dennis is pissed. Gary Trent Jr., my man. You know, a guy's been here for a week, and he is the first one, first line of defense there. Throws Dennis out the way. And Harrell's just like, what the hell's going on? Shoves Gary and OG at the same time. He's still pissed off. Goes after Gary. Gary's not having it. Yeah. Unfortunately enough, Raptors fans, this was probably the best or at least most entertaining moment of the game. As sad as that sounds, watching this, semi-sidewalk slam for all the WWE fans out there, for all the Conor McGregor fans out there, it was a little leg takedown, whatever you want to call it. Unfortunate game for Toronto. It feels like they just didn't have any juice. You showed a comment earlier, or maybe I think it was this one. It was the first live comment we got, where Phoenix Plays E says, respectable loss. We brought a 34-point lead down to 9. I like Siakam getting aggressive in the second half, drawing a bunch of fouls, resulting in him having 27 points at the end. I'm assuming he meant it's a process as another sentence. But, I liked it. I liked, the effort, I guess you could say, at the end of the game. I liked Siakam, getting to the line that many times. He was 13 for 15 from the free throw line, so he made the most of it, and he got there. He was a +5 in a game where there weren't many pluses on Toronto. Stanley Johnson -9, Aaron Baines -9, Anunoby only played 10 minutes. He was a -13, Bembry -15. Oh my goodness, Gary Trent was a -17. So, I mean, you can't really ask for more from Siakam. I genuinely was expecting him to struggle this game simply because all the Lakers really had to do was just lock into him and have the rest of the Raptors beat them. And the Raptors don't really have a team that can consistently do that. We saw Malachi Flynn have a big game yesterday against Washington. This game, he looked a lot more like a rookie. With his turnovers, he looked like he wasn't really sure when to shoot the ball. Did rebound well, 8 rebounds for him, but just a difficult game to watch as a Raptors fan. Nobody really shot the ball well. Gary Trent Jr., in a game where you probably need Gary Trent Jr. to have a big game, he didn't really shoot the ball well as well.
I think we saw today what Marc Gasol does for a team, just having like a rim protector there. The Raptors couldn't get to the rim, especially early. They were just pulling up in the mid-range, I think like 5 of the first 6 shots, and that's just not a healthy diet. Whereas the Lakers were really punishing the Raptors' lack of a rim protector, getting into the paint, forcing rotations, forcing the whole defense to collapse, and then kicking it up to 3. And obviously they shot like unreasonably well from 3, 45%. That's not going to happen every game, but at the same time, as a good shooting team getting good looks, that's really like the importance of a rim protector is so important. It can't be understated. And then the other thing was, once Harrell was ejected, the Raptors had to win the non-Gasol minutes, because the Lakers have no centers other than that, right? It was just like they have Harrell, Gasol, and Drummond.
Yeah.
And without Drummond or Harrell in the game, it was like, okay, when they went small, I think they had basically Markieff Morris at the 5. That's when the Raptors had to punish them, and they didn't. They lost those minutes too in the first half at least. So that was really the story of the game to me. That first half, they lost it right there.
Yeah, like you said, Lakers were red hot from 3. They were 10 for 14 at one point in the game. 14 from 3. Not from the field, because that's really good from the field. 10 for 14 from 3. And then it was just catch up at that point for Toronto. They couldn't catch up. And every single time it looked like they were making a run, there would be a defensive lapse or, there would be a really bad turnover for Toronto. It was a game that was one of the more difficult ones, Oren, to watch.
Yeah, I have a couple of stats. The Lakers 9 made 3-pointers in the first quarter was a season high for a quarter this season. And the Raptors, they've basically allowed the same percentage of opponent threes, like the percentage of opponent shots from 3, 44% last year, 43.9% this year. But last year, teams hit 37% from 3. This year, teams are hitting 37%. Last year, it was 33%. So it's a really big difference. And obviously, I think part of that goes back to just not being able to play this style as well, where you're collapsing into the paint and then closing out, and you just not having the athletic players to do it, not having the rim protector to trust back there. And tonight was a good example of a team just punishing them from three, which we've seen all season.
We've seen it literally all season. It feels like, I tweeted this a few weeks ago, where it literally feels like every team shoots 40%+, if not 50%+ on Toronto from three. And I don't know. I checked, you know, their team stat, you know, defending the three, and I believe they were 17th in the league, something around there. So I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's unfortunate. I feel like their system, you know, relies on switching so much, especially at the top, that, you know, and so much help defense that, you know, Oren, when you rely on help defense that much, there's going to be guys open. Even for a split second, we know the NBA has the best shooters in the world. So guys like Talen Horton-Tucker are going to let it rain on you, unfortunately, in a game like this. I think for this game, I don't know how many consecutive games it's been for Toronto, but they were out-rebounded again, this time by only 7. At one point, the Lakers had double the amount of rebounds that the Raptors had. It would have been much worse if Montrezl Harrell was in the game. They had 49 total rebounds. The Raptors had 42. Much more assists coming from the Lakers, shooting a better percentage. Raptors only had 11 points, and they forced 22 Lakers turnovers. So again, that's been the story all season of them forcing a bunch of turnovers and not making the most of it.
Yeah, they had nothing in transition tonight. And I think all season on the second night of back-to-backs, their fatigue really shows in transition, where they just don't run. And if the Raptors don't run and they're planning on winning in the half court, it's really hard for them, especially when they're missing key players. Yeah, I mean, Omar has a good comment here. The defense does look very confusing at times. It's very easy, it feels like, to get the Raptors defense to just out of sorts. And even with it's confusing too, because they're switching so much. So theoretically, they should be able to keep guys in front of them if they're switching and not have to collapse. But it's a lot of help, like extra help, I think, sometimes when it's unnecessary. Like OG Anunoby, all the time, people step in and help him when he doesn't need help. But it happens with other players too, where the help comes when it's not necessary. And then it's like swing, open three. And the Raptors got away with this style last year because, you know, the top seven in their rotation, all really smart defensive players with length, athleticism, knew how to collapse and then find whoever was open on the perimeter. And this season, you're playing guys like Utah and Stanley Johnson, Malachi Flynn, just new guys who don't have much experience in the system. And that's I think, why it looks so easy to score on them. Even though those guys are good one-on-one defenders, they aren't as high IQ in terms of reading the floor on
this
the defensive
was
end.
The summary of the entire night, Oren. This clip we're watching right here. Oh, man. Malachi gets the screen from Siakam. And that's another thing. I'm going to pause it there because I think Siakam should have been used so much more as a roller in this game. I felt like we were relying on Aaron Baines at the top of the key a lot in the minutes that he played. And also Chris Boucher. I just don't understand why you wouldn't use Siakam as a roller as much as possible in a game that doesn't include a Montrezl Harrell, that had Gasol playing well. Yes, absolutely. But there was a lot of minutes where Gasol wasn't on the court. And you mentioned how the Raptors needed to win their non-Gasol minutes, and they didn't. There was a guy named Devontae Kaycock. I hope I said his name right.
Yeah, Kaycock, I think.
Kaycock, and for me, it's he doesn't – like, that's a borderline – with all due respect, that's a borderline NBA player.
Never heard of him in my life. I watch a lot of NBA.
Ever.
Yeah.
So, and that's not disrespect – like, that. We're not trying to be disrespectful. It's just when a player like that is in the game that's, you know, at the end of the rotation for the LA Lakers, Toronto needs to take advantage. And for some reason, Toronto somehow made that guy look like a very good rotational player. He had a big dunk. He had a very good, you know, defensive stand a couple times against Chris Boucher. So, you know, this play was it. You have Siakam as a roller. Bembry gets it, loses it on the catch, dives on it, shows a great effort play, and then just And then you just
I'm just gonna roll it back here. So here's the thing. Like who So Siakam comes to the screen. So the problem is, like, I agree. I think Siakam in general should be the roller more, but there's no spacing. So when Siakam rolls, especially if Boucher is on the floor, it makes more sense for Boucher to be the screener because Siakam spaces the floor better.
That is like, true.
None of them are really.
And you got Stanley Johnson in the corner. He can't really.
And Embry
in that corner. And then you have, I believe that's Yuta Watanabe at the top of the screen right there in the corner. So it's like you don't have shooters anywhere except for maybe Malachi.
Literally two shooters.
Yeah.
And actually out of this whole fivesome, no one is shooting well right now.
Exactly.
So the Lakers are smart to stay low and like Siakam has no room to roll. And I think they had some success. The Flynn Boucher pick and roll is picking up steam. I think those guys are developing a nice chemistry together. But yeah, it makes more sense to put Boucher in that because Siakam can at least space the floor. Whereas if you reverse the roles, they're just going to, you know, sag on Boucher and then cut off the roll if Siakam's the roller. Whereas Siakam, they still respect it. Even though he's not shooting well, exactly. They still respect the shot.
And that's a problem, Oren. With this bench, you know, you get rid of a Matt Thomas, you get rid of a Terrence Davis, who, you know, as bad as those guys were, you know, as awful as they were defensively, with all due respect to the former Raptors, they could shoot when they were open. And you get rid of those two guys, and now you have, you know, Kyle out, Fred out, OG Anunoby ejected. So now you have to play guys like Stanley Johnson 26 minutes. You have to play guys like Watanabe 20 minutes. So it's like, and those guys aren't shooters. So when you play those guys together, it puts so much stress on guys like Flynn and Siakam. And it just makes it look like there's absolutely no spacing on the court. Bembry tried a couple of wide open threes this game. He missed them. He had some really great takes to the rim, but there's just not enough shooters. I didn't even mention Rodney Hood is out as well.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the box score and like this is the night for all the people who have been criticizing Nick Nurse's rotation decisions. He played everyone available tonight, you know, nine guys, but OG left 10 minutes in. So really eight guys, no one else was healthy. So he played all eight. And like, this is just what it is. You have Bembry, Watanabe, Watson, and Baines, who cannot shoot at all. And then you have Boucher and Flynn, who are struggling to shoot. So the fact that Toronto is even has a respectable offense this season is actually kind of surprising, given how bad their bench has been.
It's crazy. And Siakam, don't get us wrong.
Yeah, and Siakam.
We're not excluding him. He's been struggling all season with the three. I love, like I say this on every, you know, live show, that I love listening to other broadcasts because it kind of just gives you that different perspective of how opposing teams and their broadcasters view Toronto Raptor players. And what I heard from Wizards broadcasters in the last game was the fact that Wizards are continuously going to go under the screens versus Siakam at the top of the key. And for me, I was kind of thinking, like, that's a pretty good shot. And then I quickly realized that Siakam's shooting only 30%. I'm sure after this game, it might be 29, 28% from three this season. So that is not great.
Yeah, I mean, I give credit to Siakam because I remember at the beginning of this season on one of these shows, I said something like, he needs to figure out how to score when the three is not going down.
Yeah.
And he has. Like, 15 free throw attempts. Like, obviously, that's an outlier number, but this last like stretch for him has been the most free throw attempts of his career. He's gone to the line like 10 times on average in the last six games. So he's doing a really good job of kind of figuring out other ways to score. But like, obviously it'd be really nice if the 3-point shot came back.
Yeah. And again, I mentioned, you know, the 3-point shooting probably being the biggest problem for Toronto. It was bad. It was to the point for me, or when I was watching the game, thinking that every single time the Raptors had an open three, they weren't going to make it. Like, it was a write-off for me.
Yeah, it was terrible.
15% as a team is disgraceful. It's 15% unbelievable as an NBA team. Like, 30% I think is bad enough. You know, 25-30%, but shooting 15% from three is absolutely insane to me. We did see a couple of good baskets from a guy that I said probably should have had a better game in this one, Gary Trent Jr., who for me, it's been really encouraging, Oren, to watch his isolation game kind of grow. I like the confidence he's been showing, you know, the last few games, or really since he's put on a Toronto Raptors jersey. This one, this play stuck out to me against Alex Caruso, who's a pretty good on-ball defender, where he just takes him one-on-one.
That was similar to the game winner he hit last night. It was a little push off behind the back.
And that's just not enough of a push off that refs are ever going to call.
No, not a bad push off.
Right? That's something that Kyrie and James Harden do all the time, that Jason Tatum does, that he mastered. And again, he's probably one of the best perimeter defenders on the Lakers. And yeah, he gets cooked here.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really comfortable, Trent, in the mid range. And obviously from behind the arc, I mean, his shot in general is very encouraging from a Raptor standpoint. Still want to see him get to the rim and finish at the rim more, but yeah, that's more of a next season thing where you can only really judge next season to see if, okay, have they been able to develop him and teach him things to do that a little bit better. But as of this season, as long as he's shooting the ball this well and kind of not making defensive mistakes, you're happy.
Yeah, I'm super happy. And again, Gary Trent Jr. is a guy who's always going to look to shoot first. He's not like Norm, where it's Norm kind of expanded his game where you could expect anything. You could expect a three. You could expect him to stop and hit a mid-range or just attack the rim. Gary Trent Jr. doesn't look as confident, I want to say, taking it to the rim, which is, again, okay. He's 22 years old, spent some time in the G League early in his career. He's still not a confident, an ultra-confident NBA player like I think Norman Powell kind of reached this season. But that's okay. Like, that's one thing that just comes, I think, with confidence, you know, developing a bag, so to speak, once you, you know, attack the rim. But as long as he can take advantage of things like this where guys close out super, super hard on him, like, this was his take, right? He's looking at the ref like, why didn't you call that? Immediately sets back up for three. Pump fakes, I think that's Wesley Matthews, who just goes absolutely flying at him and takes advantage of the mid-range shot. So for
me, I mean,
he has two out of three things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Teams have to fly at him out there because he's such a good three-point shooter. And so he can obviously – that's pretty reliable to step in the mid-range and score. But some nights you're just like – since he became a Raptor, he's scored really effectively in the mid-range. But we know it's not a very efficient shot. And some nights it's not going to go down. And that's when he's the type of player who I mentioned, Siakam. He's the type of player where if his shot is not going down – he doesn't get to the rim and he doesn't get to the free throw line. So those are the things he's going to have to learn to do. But obviously super young and just got into the system. Let's do some tank top. Have you been watching any prospects? And if you have, let's assume Mobley and Cade are off the board. Who's your dream prospect after those two for the Raptors?
Ooh. There's three guys that I love in this draft, obviously, other than the two guys you named, and that's Jonathan Kuminga, Jalen Green, and Jalen Suggs, I believe his name is.
Yeah.
There's so many Jalens. There's only two. Oh, Jalen Springer, or that's Jaden Springer.
Jaden Springer. Yeah.
But yeah, I love those three. In terms of what we need, the Raptors need, obviously, a five, but other than that, they need shooting. They need some scoring help. At least off the bench, and you'd figure that, you know, whatever rookie they draft, whether it's the seventh overall pick or the second overall pick, that he's going to be coming off the bench. So I would love to see Jalen Green. I mean, I was watching him on the G League Ignite, and that guy, I genuinely think he's 19 years old. I think Jalen Green could have been in the NBA this year and has NBA level scoring traits already. Like, he could have been a pretty good NBA player this year. And I know that's crazy to say, but I mean, I genuinely believe it. He was playing a lot of guys in that G League that, you know, are in and out of the NBA.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was scoring
effortlessly. I think he averaged 20 in the G League, and that's a professional league. So,
and that's insane. I love Kuminga. He looked really good on the G League Ignite as well. So for me, it's like those two guys would be absolutely fine. Jalen Suggs, do you really need, I mean, if Lowry leaves, maybe. You're looking at, you know, another point guard or another combo type guard, you know, to pair with Fred VanVleet and Malachi Flynn and whoever else if they bring back DeAndre Bembry. I don't know if he's on a 2-year contract or a 1-year contract.
I think one.
So if they bring him back, but I'm a Jalen Green guy. I love his game. He is just an effortless scorer, and I think Toronto could do some really good things with him. And I think it's kind of unfair because I feel like a lot of people have been throwing the Cade talk around so much that if we don't get Cade or Mobley, people are going to be kind of bummed out until they realize, I think, how good some of the other guys are. The draft guys, I know Robel, who's a big Raptors draft guy, has been talking about those top-tier prospects for quite a while.
Yeah, and Robel, I was listening to him on the Locked On podcast. He was also saying he likes Jaden Springer and someone else from Tennessee, I think. But from what I understand about the draft is, like, once you get past those top five, and Robel thinks it's really a top three, and then like, 4 to, like, 12, are there's a lot of really good prospects. So to me, this feels like most likely the Raptors are not going to get a top three pick, and they're going to be more like in that 4 to 10 range. And like, I think this feels very much like a Raptors trade back kind of thing, where they see like two picks in like the, you know, 8 to 15 range. So what I'm about to say probably won't matter, but yeah, Green, I've been watching a bit of film. I genuinely think he could like one day be the best player of the bunch.
Yeah,
because his upside is crazy as a scorer. Like, the athleticism, the shooting, his upside is crazy as a scorer. But he's, like, so young and so raw. The dribbling's really raw. The passing's really raw. The defense is really raw. So I don't think he makes much sense for the Raptors, who want to contend pretty soon. Yeah, assuming Lowry leaves, Mike, I would go Suggs. Because I think he fits nicely beside Fred. He can get to the rim, which Fred can't. Like, yeah, it's kind of a short backcourt, but, you know, Fred's a lethal shooter, and Suggs can get to the rim, kind of score at all three levels, play really good defense, and he can guard up a position, so it wouldn't really be a issue if Fred's guarding point guards. And I just like Suggs. Like, he reads the game at a very high level. Yes. He's a high IQ player. He would fit right into the Raptors system. Plays fast, like Gonzaga played really fast, and he led that charge, and the Raptors love to play fast. So I like Suggs after those top two. Kuminga just, like, doesn't make sense for me because he's really not really a shooter, and he plays the same position as Siakam. So he's like a Stanley Johnson. We don't need any more players who like, come off the bench and can't shoot and are athletic big men. So, yeah.
That's fair. That's fair to say about Kuminga, but, I mean, Stanley Johnson's not it for me. So,
oh man, Kuminga, I don't need to watch any more Stanley Johnson.
If Kuminga's coming off the bench for me, instead of Stanley Johnson, and maybe instead of a Utah, I don't know if Utah's going to be here next year, I'm totally okay with that. I think length and versatility, as much as the Raptors do need shooting, length and versatility is something that any team, like, you can't really have too much.
Yeah.
Length and versatility.
Defensively, it would be crazy, the three of them together.
Kuminga can guard 2 to 4 with like ease. He's super athletic. He has a really good wingspan. I believe it's like 7 feet, something around there. I think I could see the Siakam in him, but I think he's a little better of an athlete than Siakam is, from what I've seen. Really good in transition, good in the half court. So I'm okay with Kuminga. I know a lot of people have watched the Raptors this season, and they just immediately think big, big, big. Like, if it's not Mobley, it has to be, you know, another big.
Yeah. I'm against drafting a big.
And I don't, yeah. I mean,
look at James Wiseman. I think the Warriors made a huge mistake. Like, NBA podcasts, I don't know how many you listen to, but like, man, first of all, be original. Like, everyone is talking about the Warriors now because one podcast does it. Now everyone's like, oh my God, we got to talk about the Warriors, how bad they've been. It's like, okay, man, be original. But like, yeah, Wiseman has been such a bad situation for them, and he's so raw, and he obviously doesn't fit Steph's timeline, but like, you knew he was raw, so why did you draft him? It's just a confusing pick. Centers take a really long time to develop.
That's
so
what I was gonna say. Yeah,
I'd definitely not take a center, and then I would sign a free agent center because yeah
that's fair to say. Me and a friend of mine, we always have this argument where we talk about if Wiseman was right for the Warriors, and he was agreeing with you, where he said Wiseman wasn't. And I just feel like, for me, that's the part I think that makes the most sense to me. Wiseman doesn't fit Stephen Curry's timeline, so why would you go there? They had such a need at the five. Kevon Looney, I mean, he's a solid backup five for them, but he's not really all that. But I still do think Wiseman's going to be a very good player in the league. It's just going to take longer. He barely played in college.
Yeah.
Super raw coming into the league. Literally, this guy's a teenager, man, coming into the league facing grown men. So I think it's just going to take some time. It would have been nicer to see Wiseman grow with like a Minnesota Timberwolves, for example, where they could take it easy with him. I just think the game's moving too fast with him, with veterans like Draymond and Steph. I mean, it's great to play with Draymond, probably one of the better defensive players you want to learn from. But I mean, oof, the Warriors take, you know, a LaMelo or whoever else. That's insane.
Yeah, I think like teams are learning. Like, I think the Warriors drafted in the mindset that they can have the best of both worlds. Like, Wiseman will be a long-term piece who will be their next part of the future, but he'll also help this core win. And I think teams are learning that, like, doing that is really hard. You can, to balance winning and competing with also thinking about your future is almost impossible. Like, Philly's trying to do it right now without doing the Kyle Lowry trade. And I've been harping on them for the same thing as the Warriors. Like, pick a route and stick to it. Either rebuild and like go young and try to stay young and good. Or like when you have a window, if you have Steph Curry or Joel Embiid playing at an MVP level, go for it. But staying in between is the worst thing you can do. I really think they're going to trade Wiseman this offseason and that pick and get a player.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. It's difficult. And this isn't necessarily I think we can both agree, Oren, this isn't necessarily a Wiseman issue. It's more of a Warriors selection issue. The Warriors look primed to be, and this is, again, I don't remember what the timeline was of Wiseman being drafted and Klay Thompson being injured. But regardless, even without Klay Thompson, the Warriors figured to be a playoff team this year. And I believe right now they're currently just outside the playoff race. I think they're 1-7 without Stephen Curry playing. He had that tailbone injury. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't think it's a Wiseman issue. It's more of a thing issue. It's more of a Golden State Warriors issue. Top five pick, man. With the way the Raptors are playing this year, I really, really hope
it's possible. Like,
is there?
It's possible just because the condensed schedule. I think in any other year it would be impossible. Like, the team is not that bad, but they're going to keep playing these back-to-backs. They have like 5 games in 7 days after not including those two or including those two. So I think we got a day off tomorrow and then another back-to-back Thursday, Friday, I believe. So the Raptors, like, hopefully no more COVID protocols, but even without that, just all these back-to-backs are really, they're going to be tough to win.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
Oh man, Oren, this one was a tough one. Thank you guys for staying with us for this another group therapy session. Guys, this won't be the last one. Toronto at least looks like they're going to lose a lot more games this year. I'm sorry that break everyone's bubble, burst everyone's bubble, or however you say it. Toronto does not look like a good basketball team right now. Kyle Lowry is out. Fred VanVleet is out. And
OG Anunoby is out.
Yeah, OG might miss a game. Yeah, he might miss a game.
Great form, though, for OG. You know, they teach you in martial arts. If you have that leg, you got to sweep it. And he really, he did well there.
He did really good there. We're going to end it off there, Oren. I think we've suffered for long enough. Thank you again to the Raptors Reaction Podcast listeners to this one. This was the wrap-up. Again, if you haven't been here before, the Raptors Republic Live post-game show. We want to thank our sponsor, Arif Qureshi from Remax, for supporting the show. Before everyone leaves us tonight, we need you to like, we need you to comment, we need you to subscribe to the Raptors Republic channel, turn on the post notifications. We post almost every day, if not multiple times a day. Tons of content on that channel. If you love basketball and just watching film and all that stuff, Zarar, who leads our Raptors Republic group, does a great job with film breakdown, so watch that as well. But yeah, guys, this was the wrap-up. Again, here with Oren Weisfeld. My name is Sahal Abdi. The Raptors were defeated by the Los Angeles Lakers 110-101, dropping Toronto to 19-31. We'll see you guys, I believe, 2 days from now on Thursday. And I believe, Oren, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the Chicago Bulls, who the Raptors struggled against last time. Hopefully they have some better basketball for us to watch on Thursday night. Take care, guys. Have a good one.